Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
There is a deadline looming on Beacon Hill Sunday, with just days left in the legislative session. Things like sports betting, childcare reform, and the advanced abortion protections the legislature just announced yesterday remain in limbo. State Senate President Karen Spilka is half of the team steering the ship to shore, and she joined us earlier today from the State House. Spilka serves the 2nd Middlesex and Norfolk District, and I started by asking her, wow, with a looming deadline, are you working 24/7 right now?
Pretty close to it. It's usually the case towards the end of the session.
Does anything feel different about this session than in years past?
Definitely different than the end of last session when we were still at the height of COVID. So it's a little bit nicer having more people in the State House, although we were able to get the work done and we had an incredibly successful end of session last session. And I am hopeful that we will have just as an exciting and wonderful end of session, productive end of session this time around as well.
So before we dive into some of the policy questions, you announced publicly that you had a minor stroke last November. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, and I have to say, I am so thankful I went public. It was a hard decision to go public and let people know. But since I have gone public, a few things have happened. Number one, I have had a total recovery, which is what my doctor said when it happened in November. It has an outpouring of support and assistance has just been phenomenal from people. I have heard when it happened, so many people said to me, oh, Madam President or Karen, just want to let you know, in my 20s, I had two strokes, and look at me now. Or, you know, I had a stroke a few years ago on a golf course, or I had a stroke, you know, and so many people. Then one man from Gloucester, his name will not be stated, but he contacted my office and thanked me for going public. He said, I was watching television, and I realized I woke up that morning, and my right arm was not working well, and I was having a little difficulty with one of my legs. I didn't know what was going on. I was a little confused. I was watching the TV, and I saw your interview, and you talked about your headache and being a little nauseous, and I realized I was having a stroke. He said, I never would have thought about it but for seeing your interview, and I got myself to the hospital, and I am recovering now. I mean, that it still makes me want to cry to hear that. So we need to talk about these things and not be afraid to share. Many people like myself fully recover from strokes and continue to not only thrive, but do and lead very productive, happy, healthy lives. So I think that we need to just be open to this, and I'm doing great. You know, as you see, we're choreographing around, 9-10 conference committees right now. We're having a lot of success with the bills that we are completing and putting before the members, and I'm hoping to complete even more.
I appreciate you sharing that story, too. And now let's dive into some of those bills. And I want to start with a subject I know you care strongly about, which is abortion rights. Yesterday afternoon, the Reproductive Rights Conference Committee announced a deal on expanding protections. Senate is taking it up today. When do you expect a vote, and are you feeling good about it passing?
I feel very good about it passing. I would say we more clarify the existing law. The existing law, as you know, gave forth a few circumstances where late-term abortions were allowed after 24 weeks, and it wasn't being followed by all of the providers correctly, and there were panels, in particularly some of the hospitals, that were overturning decisions that were made between the physician and the pregnant person. I firmly believe with all my heart and soul that decision must stay in the hands of the physician and the pregnant person. It is such an intimate, critical decision that we cannot allow panels, you know, risk panels or whatever, to overturn those decisions. So we clarified, we kept a lot of the original language. There are still now four circumstances. A late term abortion of 24 weeks or more is allowed by the in the best medical judgment of the physician. It's number one, necessary to preserve the life of the patient. Number two, necessary to preserve the patient's physical or mental health. Number three, warranted because of a lethal fetal anomaly or diagnosis. And the fourth one, we clarified, warranted because of a grave fetal diagnosis that indicates, and this is the operative language that's coming, indicates that the fetus is incompatible with sustained life outside of the uterus without extraordinary medical interventions.
So I want to jump in there and explain both for listeners, A, that there was tension between a Senate bill with language and a House bill that had used severe fetal anomalies, and there was some pushback that that might not be specific enough and might leave room for late-term abortions for fetuses with anomalies, but that could survive. And two, that what you're underscoring is the need to clarify the language so that there would not be trepidation to provide services because it was unclear whether somebody
Correct.
Might be sued. So this is a big change from severe to grave fetal diagnosis that indicates that the fetus is incompatible with sustained life outside the uterus without extraordinary medical interventions. Two questions. One, Governor Beaker pushed back on fatal fetal anomalies even. This is a bigger stretch. Do you believe that the governor will sign this?
I am hopeful because I believe that it clarifies without expanding access. It is much clearer. It states the four conditions. The word severe was totally unclear. And despite asking what does it mean, the Senate never got a response what its definition was. So how do we expect doctors or providers or people to interpret what it meant? It was very broad. It was problematic. It was controversial. It just was not something that the Senate could agree to. So we took it out and we substituted other language that we believe really clarifies it, as I read, particularly where the fetus is incompatible with sustained life outside the uterus, and with the terminology without extraordinary medical interventions are words, are terminology that the medical field has used in the past. It's understood. So I think that this is very helpful.
When do you, what target date do you have for this bill to make it through final votes in the House and Senate and wind up on the governor's desk, Senate President Spilka? Senate President Spilka? So we may have lost the Senate president, who is joining us on the State House line at the State House. We have been speaking with her about the end of the legislative session. Right now, rules in the legislature say that that session will end on July 31st. I believe we have the Senate president back. Senate President Spilka, are you back with us?
Yeah, and I do just want to add that included are this bill are the urgent protections that the Senate put in the budget and the House later put in, the provider and patient protections. This is so that if another state tries to come into mass.
So, Senate President Spilka, I don't know if you can hear me, but we're losing you substantially. So what I'm going to do is explain to the listeners a little bit more what we're talking about here while we work to get you on a more solid line, which we'll be able to do in just a matter of moments. So nothing to worry about here. The legislative session currently, according to rules, ends on July 31st. The sticky wicket is not only that there are policies that still need to come out of conference between the House and the Senate and get passed by both chambers and put on the governor's desk, but that technically the governor has the right to 10 days to respond to that legislation and submit any amendments. But if the session ends on the 31st and the governor's got 10 days after that, we could find ourselves in a situation where he can, in effect, kill the bill, which creates an interesting set of pressures, especially with a governor who is in his not only last term but last year and is in the opposite party of the leadership and the majority in both chambers of the State House. I'm checking back in. I think we've got the Senate president back. Senate
right
President,
on.
What an interesting experience we're having. Do we have you back again now?
Yes.
There we go. There we go.
So,
So listen, I was just...
typical COVID.
Yeah, that's right. We're all getting used to it still. So I was just explaining to listeners about the rules that say that the legislative session ends on July 31st. I asked you if Governor Baker you thought would sign this bill. You expressed hope. If he does not, would you be prepared to extend the session past July 31st, which, of course, the State House has done before, in order to ensure this gets codified into law this year?
You know, I think we would have to talk about that, but I do want to mention that the real urgent piece that is in this bill is also partially in a Governor Baker executive order. That those pieces are the direct result of what is happening by the Supreme Court and other states, so that the piece that would continue would be the provider and patient protections, and then we would have provider confidentiality. But the protections are critical because so many states are passing laws extending their arms, going into...
Really seeking to reach into other states for prosecution or civil suits, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'd like to, in our remaining time, and while we still have good sound with you, we're speaking with Senate President Karen Spilka, State Senate President from Beacon Hill, where there is a very busy end of legislative session happening. One of the things that's on the table is the question of legalizing sports betting. Mass Live reported last Thursday that Speaker Mariano expressed some doubt. One of the quotes was, quote, realistically, I don't know, we're far apart. But Mass Live reported yesterday that you expressed optimism. So where are we on the potential legalization of sports betting in Massachusetts?
Well, at this point in time, it's one of, I think, 8 or 9 other conference committees that we have going on. I would like to see sports betting be concluded and passed and on the governor's desk before the session is over. I would hope, the speaker has said that he doesn't believe it's, if college betting isn't in it, there's no point in doing it. I would hope and I would ask that the speaker change that position and not take an all or nothing approach.
So explain a little more this sticky wicket of college betting for listeners, please.
Okay.
Do you mind?
Yes. The sports betting bill has many, many parts to it. It allows sports betting for our pro football team, baseball, and all the other teams in various ways through some of the companies that we have. It would allow it at the casinos and depending upon the bill in various venues. So both bills, the House and Senate, allow that in different ways. Both bills have different tax rates, how much money the Commonwealth would take in. Both bills have different provisions on advertising. And like any other subject matter, the House did a bill and the Senate did a bill, and there are some similarities, some differences. The Speaker has said that he wants college betting in this bill. We have heard from every single college president and all the athletic directors begging us to not include college betting in these bills, that it is not a good thing. These presidents and athletic directors know their students. So that's why in our Senate version of the bill, we did not allow college, but we allowed all other sports betting.
College betting could be a significant piece of that pie. Any concern that if it does pass without college betting, that part of the objective, which is to capture the economic benefit of sports betting, would still go out of state?
You're right, but then we would be ignoring the pleas of all the college presidents and the athletic directors who know their students best. You know, the Senate was in the same position when we negotiated the Votes Act, the early voting, mail-in voting, and the Senate passed same-day registration, which was a critical piece to the Senate. And the House rejected that, did not include it, and then during negotiations and conference committee, they totally rejected it. The Senate, we didn't do an all or nothing approach. We ended up resolving that conference committee, and we now have permanent early voting, mail-in balloting. In fact, I would imagine that most of the listeners on the show today have already gotten their postcard applications.
I have.
Get their mail-in ballot. Yes, I have too. That would not have happened if we took an all or nothing approach. We need to take a look at the whole bill, and we could have sports betting sooner rather than later.
All right. That is State Senate President Karen Spilka, who serves the 2nd Middlesex and Norfolk District at the end of a very busy legislative season. I appreciate you joining us. Thanks for calling in from the State House.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great day.